So I think I may have a delicious little theory about why Peter Jackson called his new documentary about the Beatles, Get Back. In 1969, 1970, they took the Beatles and put them in a studio in London, and somebody filmed footage of them for 22 days. They wanted to put them in a fishbowl and see what their process was like and see what would happen when they were in the room together, see how it actually works, right? See how the sausage is made. What resulted was the album Let It Be, which is pretty amazing. So Peter Jackson took those 70 hours of video footage and 120 hours of audio footage and made this little tasty documentary in three parts, 2.5 hours each, give or take. So the reason I think that he called it Get Back is because of a few things that happened in the documentary in all the parts. Now remember, we're watching the Beatles create things. We're watching the genesis of these ideas. And there's a moment in part one where Paul, you know, the musicians are coming into the studio, we're watching what happens, they're saying good morning to each other, and Paul kind of sits down and starts spinning and playing his little bass there, his beautiful little Rickenbacker, and Get Back comes out. And you see they actually put subtitles up to say this is, we think, the beginning of where Get Back comes from. Interesting, right? Now at the end of part one and the beginning of part two, George leaves the band, right? He puts in his little diary like, oh, I had a cheese sandwich, left the Beatles, went home, things like that. And there's tension in the band. The reason that I'm mentioning this is because the reason that there's tension and why George left the band is because Paul's very demanding, right? And he's telling people how to play their parts. He's got this idea. He's a visionary, greatest songwriter of all time, right? But probably hard for other superstars to take when he tells them how to do things exactly. Nevertheless, Paul is sitting there with John at one point, I think it's in part two early, and John just doesn't want to be there. You can see in his eyes, he doesn't want to be there. He doesn't know what's going on. And Paul is just like, how about Jojo left his home in Butte, Montana? How about he left his home in Dowling, Michigan? And John's just kind of like, I don't care. Now, the reason I think those two examples are important is because they kind of represent what's happening for us as the observers, right? So the first example I gave you was we're watching Paul come up with Get Back. That's the whole point of the documentary. You want to watch how these greats come up with the great stuff that they do. The second example kind of represents the tension that's there, the pressure that they feel. These guys have been through everything together, but also they're musicians in a room and there's going to be tension when people are coming up with things and there's deadlines and pressures. And we're sort of seeing that play out as well. The next reason I think it's called Get Back is that by the middle to end of part two, once Billy Preston has arrived and George is back and everybody's back together, you can see that Get Back becomes one of the most powerful tracks. Like, they love playing it and like they're interested in it. And even John, who was like bored to death of what was happening as Paul was working through the process of Get Back and the lyrics and everything, they love it. They're into it. And you can feel that energy and it sort of gets transferred to you. You start to love it. And that kind of leads me into the fourth and final reason, which is that that's the point of this documentary. We've all discovered the Beatles, right? And you rediscover them too, because sometimes you'll go for a few years and you'll forget about how great they are and how they made you feel and all that. And then something like this comes along and you realize that this is the point of it all. This is why you do it, that it makes you feel a certain way, that it's inexplicable in a lot of ways. And so that's what the Beatles went through, I think, with Get Back. Like, it started as a genesis. You're watching it in a fishbowl. There's tension about coming up with the song itself, about where this will go, the direction it's headed, and then you start to love it, and then you remember why you love it. That's the whole point. I think that's why he called it Get Back. So just as sort of a quick review, if you look at each part, in part one, the amazing thing to me is A, that it's happening, that you're getting to see this stuff, like you're a fly on the wall at that moment in time, this amazing setting. But also, if you're a musician, if you're out there, and whether you played in groups or ensembles or whatever you did, like, it's very accurate and takes you back to those moments, like that you're a creative sitting in a chair next to other creatives, and especially if you have to come up with your own songs and your own materials. It's very, like, you know, nerve-wracking that you have to say, like, oh, I've got a tune. And George does that a couple of times, like, I've got a new song, you know, and they're all kind of like, you can tell Paul is kind of like, all right, let's hear your song, you know. But also at the same time, very welcoming. But you can feel that. It's very musician-heavy documentary. Like, I would be interested to know, if you aren't into music but you got through the whole thing, what made you go through it? Because listening to them play Don't Let Me Down, I've Got a Feeling, Get Back, all these things over and over and over again, that's a very normal thing for an artist, for a musician, speaking from personal experience. But for other people, maybe they drifted off or fast-forwarded. I don't know. But these guys are so charming and so likable and charismatic that I think probably a lot of people just pushed on anyway. There were a couple of things in part two, many things, but I'm only going to point out a couple of things that kind of caught my eye. One is the hidden microphone between John, the conversation of John and Paul, that the producers of this movie... had the cameras and whatever, when they were discussing whether George, what they were going to say to George and how they're going to convince him on the second meeting to come back to the Beatles, they'd placed like a secret microphone in where they knew Paul and John were going to be having lunch. And I assume that they talked to Paul and Ringo about this to say, like, what should we just edit this? Is it okay if we play some of this? I wasn't offended by it, but it was kind of interesting. I mean, I wanted to hear it, of course. But that was an interesting thing to me because, you know, obviously John isn't around to say, like, I don't want this played. But there isn't anything that racy, but it's so fascinating to listen to these guys who are, by the way, they're like 26 at this point. 26. These guys say, like, well, when you do this, it feels like this, and you've always been the leader, but we're annoyed when this happens. And it's like they're very mature for their age, like showing up on the Ed Sullivan Show when they're like 17 probably, and feeling like they've gone through this cycle of time that's lasted three or four lifetimes, but they're only 26. So anyway, I thought that was really fascinating that people were like, we got to listen to this conversation, put a CIA secret microphone in that cafeteria room. The other thing I thought was interesting was when George had come back, there was an article written in, like, I want to say the Daily Mail, or not the London Times, but one of the British newspapers in London, and talking about how the Beatles were over and George had left the band and their whatever. And they were kind of playing music and reading that out loud in a way, kind of bonding by reading it. That's the way that I took it, like that they were using that as a healing process for themselves to say, like, hey, look, this person outside of us thinks they understand what's happening in here, and they don't. They don't understand who we, like, our relationship to each other, and that I felt like that kind of strengthened them, which was an interesting thing. So the final thing I mentioned in part three, there's lots of them, but the one that sticks out the most is how it comes together, that they have all these tracks, they're skeptical the day of, they don't know, they've got like maybe like three or four things that they think they are ready to play, even though there are 14 tracks they're supposed to technically play or supposed to have for the album, and they want to be able to play them live on the rooftop. And I think they play like five or six songs up there, and three of them make it onto the album. Like, to go from, you know, not knowing that you're going to pull anything off to playing five songs and three of them end up being on the final album is, it just tells you how great they are. And they know they have it. That's the thing, is when you watch them playing and they just sort of come to life. And, you know, it's sad to see at the end, I don't want to spoil it, but sad to see at the end where they walk off the stage because there's cops there, Bobbies. And it says this is the last public Beatles performance. And it's like, oh, guys, please don't. And also, Get Back was the last song they played in a public performance. The last hurrah. So that's another Get Back thing to throw in that Get Back soup I was making, that gumbo. Get Back gumbo, the GBG. The second to last thing is that when they're playing Get Back, it's really funny when the cops are behind Paul and he's playing and he's singing something. It might have been Get Back, it might have been I've Got a Feeling. And Paul just kind of looks back and sees the cops and he goes, woo! He loves it. He loves the magic of it all, the energy. They know that people are outside on the street level, like getting into it. The other people are popping up at the rooftops. They're climbing out their windows. You know, they know. It's. I thought that was a pretty funny moment. The last thing I'll say about this is the interesting take that people have in reaction to their rooftop concert. They had people, they had a camera at street level, right? And they were showing people, and most people were like, this is the Beatles? Are they the Beatles up there? This is great, I love it, I love this new music. But there were some people who were like, I think it's rubbish, I think it's too loud, and I think it's, you know, it's not the proper place, or it's not as good as their old stuff, or whatever. And it's just, it becomes like a very interesting microcosm. I don't know if I'm using that word right, but like a small representation of humanity and how people think. And you listen to the people who love it, and they're happy that those are the Beatles up there. We're listening to the Beatles. We're listening to new stuff. Nobody's heard this before outside of their little circle here. Like, that attitude, that perspective is what makes them the Beatles, that it makes you feel like today is the day, like you're watching this somewhere, wherever you are, and this could be your last day. This could be my last day. We don't know. And rather than get depressed about that, it's like they make you enjoy it, and you watch them playing, and you watch them singing and dancing throughout the documentary, but then enjoying themselves playing together outside, and the people who connect with that, that's the goal, right? That's got to be the goal. Those feelings and those emotions and that positive connection to ourselves and nature and what we are and what this is, that's what the Beatles do for us, I think. That's what it does for me, anyway. And, you know, for the opposite of that, for the people who don't, they maybe have lost their way, or they haven't found, and it could be they just don't like the Beatles. That's fine, too. Like, I'm not a huge Rolling Stones person. Like, so, clearly they're popular. I'm not sure why. But you gotta watch this. I think it's the best 8 or 9 hours you'll spend this year. It's the hottest 8 or 9 hours on your calendar this year. But seriously, you should watch it. It's great. It'll get you on a Beatles kick. I can't stop singing the songs in there, and I can't stop thinking about watching them. And I don't know if this somehow Paul McCartney sees this video. I have to meet Paul and Ringo. Like, I wish I could have met all four of them, but you know, I would risk. I'm vaccinated, and I don't go to big gatherings, and I've got a lot of questions about what's going on. But I'd take that risk. For Paul, you know, or Ringo, just to be there to watch them. He could play the first verse of any song, and I'd pay anything to see it, just to be there in the room. It's a true story. Thank you so much for watching. Please subscribe if you can, or go to patreon.com/arthouseradio if you like to give further. I hope you enjoy the Beatles. I hope you enjoy your new Beatles kick if you watch the documentary, which I highly suggest you do.